But like, I still love riding, and like, I'll be the first guy at the lift waiting for it to open for practice. And I get a bit of shit for it. Like, everyone's like, oh, how many runs have you done today? And like, because I used to do so much practice just because I love riding.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten older, I have gotten more wise to it, because obviously you need to be as fresh as you can when you come to racing. But I just love riding. And even still, like, when I go riding, like, I have some friends and they'll faff around and they'll take ages getting ready. I just want to get my gear on and go ride. And just because I love it still.
Yeah.
Unleashed with the Dingo and Danny, fueled by Monster Energy.
Dingo's on not a big ready. Text mish.
Well, it's my birthday. Are we live?
Yes.
Birthday, we're not we're live. Live. We're live. It's the first. No, you can't do that now. Okay. It's the first. It's the first show back. So it's bear with us because. It's, I don't know, it's like a little, I'm not a little loose. I mean.
It's been a big holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a big holiday season. How you doing, Danny?
Doing really good, yeah.
Looks like you made a lot of hats over the holidays.
I did make quite a few hats over the holidays.
What's your favorite one?
I did make some really cool corduroy ones.
Ooh. Yeah?
Yeah, corduroy. And then this material, which is like a blanket thing.
That's. Do you go and actually like to the fabric store and just choose your favorites?
I do, but sometimes I don't know what I'm going to get because I order the fabrics online.
Oh.
And then I cut them up.
Oh.
But I want to start going to like fancy fabric districts.
While you're in LA, you should. They have like all of those fancy famous stores here.
They do? Mm-hmm. I've seen the markets like near downtown.
Yeah.
And then we have Brittany Palmer.
Hi.
Always lovely to have you. You brought your dogs in today.
I did. Hendrix and Banana Joe wanted to come hang.
Yep. So if a dog makes an appearance, that is... They don't look real, by the way, so maybe we should give them an appearance. Just so everybody can see. And our guest today, hailing from the UK, let's give it up for Danny Hart. Crowd goes crazy.
Thanks for having me.
You're from Redcar.
That's right.
United Kingdom. Redcar. That is a weird name for a suburb.
It is.
Do you call them a suburb there?
Just a town. Yeah.
And it's northern England?
Yeah, we're like not far, like as far north as you can go, pretty much like on the northeast coast. We're just like, there's only one city above us and then you're in Scotland. So yeah, pretty far up.
I'm going to go ahead and say that you sound like you're a character from Game of Thrones.
Is that right?
Do you ever hear that?
I haven't watched that. No, I've never.
I kind of assume that's how like living in England is.
No, because there's different accents. Yeah. Like London, UK is, this is a thicker accent. Yeah. This is like a real, it's a real.
But like for me, if I go like I say, an hour north to Newcastle, like even I have to tell them to slow down sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
So. What's your football team? Because is there a football team in Redcar?
No, Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And then who's your big, is Newcastle the rival team?
Yeah, Newcastle are like way better than us now, though. Like they're like doing really well in the Premier League. We aren't even in the Premier League.
You guys are out? Yeah. Do people come in and out of the Premier League?
Yeah, and we've been out of it for a while.
And then I think if you're going to go any further north, so it goes into Scotland?
Yeah, so you've got like where I am, Newcastle, then you're in the borders of Scotland, and then you're like Edinburgh and... Yeah, you're up there.
Is it crazy to say that you have a little bit, you sound a little bit Scottish? Or is that crazy?
That's crazy.
Okay, sorry.
That's crazy.
I'm back. I'm Australian, so he can hate me off the bat. Yeah, he's already not going to like me. So I'm just going to like dig it in a little bit. I got to start with this. Redcar Rocket. When I originally looked at it, I thought it was Red Rocket as a nickname, but you're the Redcar Rocket.
Yeah, that's right. I guess like when I was like younger and first coming into like having a name, you saw... sort of thing, like my friend who was a graphic designer and we sort of like tried to make a logo and I was writing for Fox at the time, like clothing, and they had like, they all wanted us to have butt patches like on our pants, and that's what we came up with, and it sort of just stuck. So yeah,
the Red Rocket.
Red Car Rocket.
Oh my god.
Red Car Rocket.
There was a movie that just came out, Red Rocket, with anyway, moving on. Let's do the intro. You're a professional mountain bike rider, 2011 and 2016 UCI world champion, 2015 British national champion. Explain to us UCI, like on a whole, because our listeners or viewers are kind of broad based on everything. Yeah. And then kind of like walk us through the, you know, 2011, 2016 world champion.
Yeah, so the UCI is like the cycling governing body, and they're based out of Switzerland. So like they're like the governing body of all like the world championships. And so when I won the world championships twice. So what happens is we have a World Cup series, which is a championship over 6 to 8 races, which gives you an overall champion. And then in cycling, we have like the World Championships, which is like a 1 day format where you get like a rainbow jersey, and it's like really like sort of, that's like the pinnacle. And so I won in 2011, like my second year in pro. Like I did 2 years junior, 2008 and 2009, then I had my first year pro 2010, and then won in Switzerland in Champry in 2011. So I was really quite young, and I hadn't even won a national championship by that point. So it was pretty good.
So that really kind of happened fast for you.
Yeah, it was like I had a good season leading up to that race, and I knew that was going to be a good race. And the heavens opened on that day, and it really rained. I think they were saying the event was like 20, 30 minutes off being cancelled because the cloud was so low in the mountains that the helicopters were like, it was touch and go whether they could fly.
Right.
And thank God they never cancelled it.
Yeah, wow. So Danny's a bit of a competitor. He's 2002 and 2006 Olympic silver medalist.
Oh, there you go. Fair.
He never won, but
yeah, I didn't win
close.
The Olympics. I came close, but similar to yourself, like I definitely had that cool moment as like a young athlete.
Yeah.
Where it was like, you know, catapulted to the top of the podium from the
Olympics
season before.
Is even crazier level, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But I mean, must have been a big shock to you after winning this big major championships, right?
Yeah, and like I said, I was having a good season that year, but like I won by like a big margin.
Yeah, like 11 seconds.
Yeah, it was
that's huge.
It was a big margin, and it was the conditions were crazy. So that just like I've sort of like for a few years after that, I didn't not do well, but I didn't really back it up like I would have liked. But that was so good that it just carried me for a long time.
That's awesome. Can we like how did you get like obviously one of the first things you do as a kid is you learn how to walk, crawl, and then you get a bike.
Yeah.
And then at what point did mountain biking become like, okay, this is something that I'm super into and I'm going to try and make this professional. I'm going to try and have a go at it.
Yeah, so obviously as a kid, like you say, you learn to ride a bike. And then my dad raced like pretty much anything with 2 or 4 wheels. And but he was never like a high level. But when you're a kid, you think your dad's the best at everything.
Yeah.
So as I've looked back, like when he was racing motocross and I was just there in the background just all the time. And then I started, my town got a skate park. So I started riding BMX. And then from there, I raced BMX for a few years. But because with BMX, you can race from a young age. And downhill, like when I was younger, you had to be like 13, 14 before you could even do a race. So I was racing BMX before. And then I raced both for a little while. And then downhill just took over and not really looked back since. It's crazy to think now that I'm like 31 and married with 2 kids. Like when I ride my bike, I don't feel any different to what I did when I was 15, 16. You know, you're still just doing what you love.
Yeah.
And where you're from, is it a big mountain town or, I mean, what?
There's no mountains in England. It's flat.
No, we don't have many mountains.
There's hills.
Well, how did you get into the mountain part of it? Like, what was the first mountain you rode on? There had to have been one.
Yeah, to be fair, it was a lot of traveling. Like, we used to drive a lot. Like, yeah, we don't have big mountains. I think we've got, like, 2 tracks that have, like, ski lift access. But I think because we're quite a small country and, like, really closely knit, like, the scene's really good. And we know we have to work hard for it. Mm-hmm. Like, because we don't have a ski lift where we can just go and ride every weekend. And we're like, if it's raining on the weekend, where if you're like out in, like, we don't take it for granted. If it's raining and the weather's rubbish, we still need to get out there and do it because we have to travel for it. We have to work hard for it. Whereas, like, I see, like, when I was younger, like, you have places like the Alps in France, the French Alps, and you've got Whistler. And when I was younger, there wasn't many guys coming out of there because what I think is they just take for granted what they've got. And if the weather isn't perfect today, oh, well, we'll just leave it and we'll go tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas we, like, we work super hard. And
I feel like there's going to be such a respect in the community when they see you out doing that because they know what it takes to actually persevere.
Right. Like, when I was younger, like, not as much now, but, like, the UK had some of the best, like, if you have the top 10 at a World Cup, it wouldn't be out of the question to have five guys from the UK. Mm-hmm. Like, France have taken over a little bit now, you know, they've got a really good crop of riders, but, like, for a long time, the UK were really, like, also with the Aussies as well, they were super quick. And
yeah, well, they're super stupid too. That's why they...
I feel like you have to be. I mean, I remember it must have been like 2000 kind of 10 era when all these mountains in America actually started turning the lifts on in the summer. And it was like kind of blew my mind because we take it for granted, like you said, snowboarding down these runs and skiing so fast. And then you get on a bike and it's like you're so focused on like where you're going, and I'm like, how did it take me like an hour to get down this one chairlift when on a snowboard it'd be like 3 minutes, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy though. Like, what we do, we have all like big helmets on, all protection and everything, and we see the snowboard guys doing huge cliff drops and they've just got a plank of wood.
Now fuck that thing. What you guys do is super dangerous, and I have found a newfound respect for it about when Danny said we spent a lot of time in Mammoth, and Mammoth became like a place in the summertime where they turned it on and they built the track and they have all the trails and stuff. And I went down there once and I was like, I'm good, I don't need to do that again. Because it's not if, it's when. You guys go down all the time and it's fucking, there's rocks and there's dirt and it's steep and you're going fast.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous.
The motocross guys say the same. Like, we watch the motocross guys and think, well, it's so dangerous what you're doing. But then they, like, I guess it's true we have trees, rocks, like tree roots in the ground. There's so many things that could lead you astray.
You said something that earlier, you won the world, your first UCI World Championship in 2011. I'm not good at math. You said you were young. I think you were around 19 or 20 then.
That's right, yeah.
And you said that day it almost got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you had it in you because no matter what, growing up, whether it was rain, hail, or shine, you were going to show up and ride?
Yeah.
That prepared you for that moment, do you think?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I think so. But like, and then since that day, that stigma has never left me. If we're at a World Cup and there's a slight bit of rain on the radar, everyone's like, oh, it's your race. But that's not the case now because the level's so high that anyone can win on the day. But like, I do have good rides in the rain, so it does add up, I guess.
How does that like change the track and, you know, the trail from when it is like raining heavy when you're at a place like this in the Alps? I mean,
yeah, so when I won that day, we hadn't ridden the track in the rain. Like, it had been good all week, and then it just absolutely just poured rain from like, I don't know if we didn't even have practice in the morning in the rain, I don't think, but and then the rain just came, and yeah, it was just, there was just a river running down the middle of the track. And because I've ridden at this point in the rain for years, like at home, I know that under the water, so under that river,
there's dirt and rocks.
No, it's like it's clean. There's water running across the top of it.
Yeah.
So I know that there's grip in there. Granted, you get a little bit wet, but I was in the start line. I saw the river running down the track and I was like, right, well, get in there and away we go. And honestly, like, I could have done that. Like, I could have done that run over and over again.
So you really follow the river, is you're saying you follow
much,
that?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was your advantage in a way.
I guess, yeah, because I can ride that stuff better than other guys. And so Aaron Gwynn, American guy, was having a really good season. Like, he won the World Cup overall and he was the guy to beat. And so I was second to last rider to leave the start, I think. No, not even. I was like, I think I had maybe number six or something, so meaning there's five guys behind me. And then there was no one, like, nobody was getting down the hill. And then Aaron was on a good run. I've looked at the times and I've looked at video and stuff, and he wasn't going to beat me at this point. And then he crashed. So, yeah, it's like, another way of looking at it is that the guys out here who don't necessarily ride in the rain very often, they, like, just go as hard as they can because they don't really know. Whereas my way of looking at it is because I know how it is. So there's no in-between. I think you're either good and you just take your brain out and do it, or you just get on the back foot and it just doesn't work.
Well, how important is it staying on the bike? Obviously, there in those situations, there's lots of people that are going to crash in races, yeah, right? And there's obviously a strategy to, all right, you've got to push the limit, but also you've got to stay on your bike because most people,
yeah,
are not going to finish.
Yeah. So there's been a few races over the years where the rain has come and it's totally messed up the race. Like, there was one race in 2017. It was Lourdes, our first World Cup. And the day it just poured rain. And so the guys that didn't qualify very well, so they come down before the fast guys at the end. It didn't rain for them. So then, like, guys that would never normally be in the top 10 potentially come down in the dry.
Yep.
And got a perfect track. And then the guys that qualified really well got totally poured rain. And we were just like, there was no chance of doing anything. And I fell off once or twice, to be fair. And then I pretty much just gave up. I was like, I'm just going to ride down and get to the finish line. But I never thought about it. Like, lots of people were crashing. So if I'd have just carried on pushing each time, like, my wife went crazy with me. Like, what are you doing? Like, everybody's falling off.
I
fell off a couple times, but I was at the back of everybody that fell off because I just, like, just get me home.
Is your wife at every race?
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Like, my wife used to race World Championship motocross.
Yep.
So she really knows what it takes.
And yeah.
We just travel around Europe in our camper. And yeah, we have the kids and yeah, it's just like home from home.
How good's a camper van?
Oh yeah.
Oh, they're the best.
We did it. We just had a TV show on one of the seasons. Well, we drove around buses here, but one of the seasons we did the European vacation and we spent like 3 weeks in Europe,
yeah,
with way too many people in one motorhome. Yeah. But that was probably one of the best summers ever.
It was, yeah, really cool.
It's awesome.
What's your favorite, you know, obviously Whistler's a big one. You said Switzerland. What's your favorite trail or favorite place to like ride? And what's like the scariest one? Because I want to get into like the actual difficulty and the crashes.
So last season, the season just that we just had, we had a new track in Andorra and it was super short. It was really dry. And it was, so when the track's really short, it's really intense. Like, you can't let up at all. Like, it was between 2 and 3 minutes, I think. So like that 2 and 3 minutes, it's just so, like, I'm going to say dangerous. I know they're all dangerous, but like this, you're pushing so hard and like the level of everybody is so high that like it's really scary. And there was like some awkward, like nasty gap jumps with like horrible landings and just lots of big crashes. That was like even, that was the hardest one for me last season.
Yep.
And the top of the track is really fast and big corners, big jumps where you can't really make or lose a lot of time. So that makes the track even shorter again, if you like, because once you leave that top section and you've got like a minute and a half of hard track, it really makes that minute and a half super important and, yep, really intense.
You had a second place at Leo Gang. Did I, yeah, pronounce that right?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
And that was in June. In June, what part of the season's that?
So that was still early on.
Yeah.
It was like the start of the season, really. Yeah, that was really cool. Like, that the track there, like, they changed it a couple of years ago because it used to be really, like, bike parky, like, easy, just berms and really fast. Whereas then they changed the last section to a really steep, technical, horrible, hard, because it's always wet. We've never had a dry race.
Really?
A dry weekend.
Oh, okay, yep.
It always seems to come good at the end, but like practice and everything, it's just a battle to get down. So yeah, it was normally like I'd struggle there. I've crashed there a lot of times and not actually made the final like over the years, but this year it turned out really well and I put a good race run and my old teammate actually won and I was second.
So, sick. And then you became a father for the second time a few days later?
Yeah.
So competing at Snowshoe?
Yeah, we were in Snowshoe. Sophia, my wife, would normally be there with me, but obviously, for obvious reasons, she wasn't there. And yeah, she gave birth to our daughter there, yeah. And the season sort of turned around from that point because Darcy, our newest, wasn't very well, so it was hard after that.
So you guys stayed back home?
No, so I went to Snowshoe.
Okay, yeah.
Snowshoe, and I had to get an emergency flight home after.
Oh, shit.
Because we had another race actually the weekend after in Canada, which I missed because I had to come home because my daughter was sick. So, yeah, it was the season took a turn from there. Like, my head was up my ass and my head wasn't really in it. And it was like the bike wasn't the main thing in my life anymore because there was a lot of other stuff going on. So the season sort of didn't go so well after that.
And everything's all good now?
Luckily, yeah. Like, she was an intense, like, when I went home, so I raced on the Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was in a car at 5 p.m., then on a flight at 10 p.m. that night, and then I walked in and she was in ICU, like, breathing tube, and it's brutal to see your baby, like, the first time in that situation. You couldn't pick her up or anything.
Oh.
But then it's gone full circle and she's, like, firing on all cylinders now, like, but they don't know what the problem was.
Really?
That's what's scary.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there's tough, yeah, that's, yeah.
It was pretty heavy, to be fair. And you think, though, like a few races after, there was, like, three races after that, and my wife was like, look, we need you to go, and we want to see you doing, it'll be better for us if you're there doing that, and, like, because my wife, like I said, she used to race motocross, and she knows what it's like. So, like, I was like, look, the team, I don't need to go. My team's saying I can stay home, I can be here. Well, they were in hospital for, like, 7 weeks. And she didn't leave the hospital, my wife. So it was like, she said it's like being in jail, but it's worse because you've got a sick baby.
Oh.
It was. So then I ended up going. And, like, I was like, right, okay, let's do this. Let's get my head in the game and we can figure this out. And it just didn't work. So the season sort of went away a little bit after that, which it doesn't matter at the end of the day because it was for obvious reasons.
Yeah, family's family. And,
yeah,
you know, you said even earlier, like, you feel like you're still just a kid when you're in the bike, but there's got to be situations. Obviously, it's your second child, you know, and your second daughter, but there has to be something going through your mind where it's like, yeah, what I do is fun. I love it. It's not a job. But at the end of the day, it's also extremely dangerous. And every time you get on your bike, something could happen or you could not come home to your family or not be able to support your family.
Yeah. And that's maybe why I should have nipped it in the bud earlier and said, look, I'm peacing out. This isn't good for me. I need to go and be with my family, but I'm paid to do a job. And I was like, I'm gonna be there for you, for my team, and do what I can do and do the best job I can. We didn't know what that was going to be at the time. It wasn't ideal, but I think they would have appreciated me being there as well. So
yeah.
And like I said, Sophia, my wife, wanted to see me in the start line, and that was because she knows that was made her stronger, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Me going out and doing what I had to do.
Yep. No, that's awesome. What? So she was, and then your dad was a super gnarly into moto. I see you ride moto a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a pro mountain bike rider, the kids growing up, are the kids going to be more mountain bike? Are the kids going to be going moto? Or are the kids going to be ballerinas?
Well, that's funny because my eldest daughter, who's 3 next month, she's like the ultimate girly girl. You know, she loves it. And but me and my wife, like, she raced motocross, like I said. I've done is race. I've never, like, never had a typical job, you know? So it's like, we'll just have to see. They can, as people say, they can do what they want to do, and we'll support them either way.
It's funny, right? Growing up in a camper van, traveling around, it's you would think, oh, maybe, and then it's either or, right? It's
she's
one of the-
been traveling since like day one.
Yeah,
like as a baby, she was straight out in the camper and traveling around the world.
Have you had any severe crashes?
I've been quite good, to be fair. Like last season, I like hit my head quite a few times, and like was I. Thinking, Jesus, this is just like happening time and time again. But and then I always walked away. I must bounce quite well or something. And
but probably got a tough head.
Yeah,
I mean, I mean, helmet. You probably got ancestors that were knights or something. So you're probably pretty tough up there.
But like injury wise, like I've been pretty good. Like when I was younger, I had like my shoulder rebuilt. I guess that's as bad as it's gotten.
Yeah, wow. That's surprisingly good. Okay. You were pretty good with injuries up until later in your career.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I have only had a couple of surgeries, and then just my knee, ACL, was like the only thing I really had to have repaired, and definitely broke a couple bones. But I feel like there's like this cat-like reflex in you know, that helps you like get back to your feet. For snowboarding in a way, you know.
But, you guys know how to fall.
But I've definitely, I think I've cried.
That's what you learned to
I've
do.
Cried more on a bike, I think, than I have on a snowboard.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
You had any good bike accidents?
No. I mean, I went mountain biking one time, and I remember I hadn't ridden a bike in years. And I was like, oh, it's like riding a bike. It's super easy. And then I'm going up the mountain. I'm like, holy shit. It's so strenuous to even just get up, let alone going down. And then I just remember the whole time I was going down, you just kept hearing squeals. And I was just like, it was terrifying. So, no bike accidents. That was the last time.
It's crazy. Down. Our snowboard team is super into it. Like Zach Hale and Sage Kutzenberg and those guys like rip on their mountain bikes. Like every year when they go to Mount Hood, they ride their mountain bikes more than they snowboard. Which is cool because I think like pre like 2010, like what you were saying, it wasn't that – it wasn't as –
like the access wasn't really there. You know, it was people kind of like biking up and then down. But now with like the chairlifts, and I think the technology is so, you know, has
so where do you
advanced.
Put the bike on the chairlift? I'm sorry.
They have a rack for it.
They have a rack for it.
They have a rack for it.
I liked what you said, though, about how we kind of not take for granted, but yes, like of the summer times in the mountains, like because there are people who do this as a profession that don't get that opportunity. And I'm always up in the mountains when it's snowing, but I've never experienced it in the summer yet.
Yeah, I have been to Big Bear once, like when I used to come over here more. I did a couple of days up there, and it's really cool. It would be good to have a World Cup out here because, like, a lot of the sponsors, a lot of the brands are out here. It's the same with motocross, I guess.
Like, is there no big one in America?
So we have a World Cup, which I won in 2019 in West Virginia.
Yep.
In snowshoe.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's like...
That's it.
It's out there in the middle of nowhere. It's like and a night. It's just
It's
crazy.
A nightmare to get there. Yeah. Is the one in Whistler still one of the biggest?
See, they don't have a World Cup in Whistler. They have Crankworx.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah. And for me, like, I don't want a World Cup in Whistler because I go there, like... I used to go there, like, every fall on holiday. Like, after the season, I would like to go to Whistler and just ride for myself, like, eat burgers, drink beers, do all the fun stuff. But if they take a World Cup to Whistler and we can't do that.
You're not eating burgers on race week.
No, like.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe the heavier you are, the quicker you go down.
Yeah, so
the nightlife in Whistler is pretty exciting, too.
Can't party, can't eat. So what is
He's
like,
married with kids. He doesn't care about the nightlife.
Oh, come on.
Here's about the burgers.
Could slam some beers.
So I'm curious. So in preparation for these competitions that you do, like what is your diet schedule? What's your training schedule? Like, is it just straight biking? Or do you know?
No, so like here the past like 2 weeks that I've been in California, I've been using the gym here at Monster. We do a lot of physical training, a lot of miles on the road bike for like base fitness, and there is more than just riding the bike down the hill. Like to the naked eye, people think, oh, it's just riding down a hill, but there's a way more into it than that.
And your diet, you have to like
diet,
be clean,
try and eat well, right? Which is harder over here than it is at home.
Really? Yeah, isn't that true? Like I was just back home and I eat so much better back at home than I'm like, oh, I'm going to eat good when I get
that's
back
in
home.
Australia, though. It's nah, like fish it's, and veggies.
And it's got worse because of Postmates and Uber Eats and all this shit that they give you accessibly. You don't even need to walk to get it. You just sit on your couch and you're like, do-do-do-do.
Yeah, but you're the one choosing the restaurants to Uber Eats.
Make it easy, Tiger.
Not always.
You could just suggest a suggestion on your lunch.
Just a suggestion. I mean, burgers are way more fun to eat.
Are they?
Than, say, salads sometimes.
Way more fun. What's your favorite American food?
I like Chipotle.
That's a good one.
It's not American, but it's not American.
Yeah, it's American.
It's like...
Where'd it come from?
Well, it's South America. No, I'm just kidding.
It's American owned, probably. We could probably check on that one.
That's like Chicago.
We're getting confirmation. It's American.
But also, hey, have you had Baja... Is it... No, not Baja.
Baja Fresh?
No, what's the other one that's really good?
What's your favorite American food? I mean, what's your favorite food from back home?
Fish and chips.
Fish and chips. They don't do fish and chips right here.
No, they don't. No.
They do not.
I don't even like.
You want to do a fish and chip franchise? Me and you will talk later. They do not know how to do it here. It's crazy. It's something so simple, and America has not figured out the fish and chips.
Because you just cut the French fries really thick, right? What do you call them? Chippies?
Yeah, we call them chips. Yeah, it's
chips.
Chips.
Chippies.
I don't know. I thought you guys said chippies. You don't. No, you say it. No, maybe
chips.
It's a New Zealand thinger.
But yeah, like if I've been away for ages, the first thing I do when I go home is fish and chips.
Yeah,
I
live on the coast as well, so we have like really.
It's probably so beautiful
fish.
There.
Yeah, it's great.
And like, are there like still random like just old castles like kind of in places?
I guess so.
That's what I like. That stuff still exists, you know? That like there was an old world that still exists. There ain't no castles in California.
Everything's so new.
Well,
yeah, nothing's new.
Everything's so new here.
Not the kind of... Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. Brittany hangs out in castles, but they're modern-day castles.
Yeah, this one over here. She's in her castle in Vegas. No, but you're right. Everything in America is really, literally under like 300 years old. So maybe there's like an old wooden house.
Mm-hmm. And everything's so like... clean here, like I say, it's like it's just different.
Yeah,
like if we want to go for some lunch or something at home, we can just like walk or drive 10 minutes and we'll be in like a nice little town. But here, everything's like big shopping malls and complexes. It's like it's not like very like I don't know,
it's crazy, right? So, where I grew up in Australia on the Mornington Peninsula. Just wedged down the bottom of Melbourne, which ends up being the mouth of where Torquay is. And then the next bit of land is Tasmania, which is the very bottom. So it's Bass Strait in the sea. And people come to California and some of the most expensive places, Santa Barbara, Laguna, either side, all of it. The water's not that pretty here. It's crazy when I go home and you didn't really think of it as a kid, but the water where we grew up, it looks like you're in the middle of nowhere and it's beautiful blue and you can see all the way through it. And it's just, I mean, I think here is maybe a bit pollution. I think you've got some of the, like, what's California? There's more people live in California, the state, than all of Australia. There's like 30-something million people that live here.
Is that right?
Crazy, right? And then if you were to take California, split it apart from America, it's like the fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world. Mm. But the pollution and the ocean and people, but you go home and I'm like, growing up as a kid, you just didn't even realize that, like, a place nobody knows about in the Mornington Peninsula has this crystal clear blue water, and it's beautiful.
That's because I guess you guys don't like throw trash in the ocean. You just burn it all.
Yeah, I don't know what we do with it. I think China dumps their trash off in Darwin.
Like, I think we went to Laguna the other night for dinner, and that was more like European style. Like, just nice little town, like little streets with different bars and restaurants. Whereas, like, we're staying in Corona now, and you just get in the car and drive to, I don't know the places, but, like...
Chipotle.
That, yeah.
Qdoba. Qdoba's the other one you got to try. You got to. It's so good.
Were you sitting on that one for
no,
this whole
I didn't want to, like, say it.
Oh, yeah, when did that one pop back into your head, man?
I didn't want to shout out Baja Fresh, because I don't really totally back their food, but Qdoba... is basically like the sister of Chipotle.
Wait, you don't back Baja or you don't back Chipotle?
I don't back Baja.
Oh, why?
I don't know. They just don't have that fresh like vibe.
Because the others do?
It doesn't.
Even though it's Baja Fresh, I feel like you could get fresher food in Baja.
You're probably correct, Dan.
Yeah.
And everything's so expensive here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You go. We go for dinner with the family, and it's like, you're looking at $100.
Yeah.
And it's just, and if you go for lunch as well, there's like, you're spending $200 a day.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, they stiff you here. Yeah. And then if you live here, you got to pay taxes, and then they don't even fix your roads.
But they give you free water when you sit down here. And in Europe, they don't give you free water.
Well, that's not really a thing. They do, probably give you free water in England.
They give you free water.
No, they give you cheap beer.
Yeah.
Maybe. If you like drinking water that tastes like toilet water, then maybe you're all right.
Okay. In England or here?
No, the water in England's probably fresh.
I don't know.
No? Small town it would be, yeah.
I would say
here not so fresh. So let's take it back to when you got started. What was the scene like getting into mountain biking where you're from? Redcar.
Yeah, so where I am in Redcar, there wasn't really a great scene. But even now, like, there's a little bit, but it's not like, I have friends who live in Wales and in Scotland, and there's really good scene where I just have to travel a lot. I should probably have moved away, but, you know, home's home, and I never moved away. But, and it's too late now, really.
I totally respect that. But you're a teenager. Like, as a teenager, you started traveling to Wales and going to these other places.
Yeah.
So you kind of had to travel to the scene. There was really no one pushing you at home.
No, like, well, my parents. My dad was pretty hard on me and pushed me hard. But there was no other riders, really. No, I used to ride a lot of BMX, and obviously everybody as a kid, pretty much.
I raced BMX as a kid.
Or scooters now.
Did you do well? Yeah. Do you find the scooter? You can't fight the scooter thing. It's so crazy. We were at Brian Deegan's. This is a couple of years ago, and he's got this huge moto track. He's got like all the setups for everything in this skate park. And then his kid goes and grabs a scooter, and he's like, "What do you do?" Yeah. You know, like. But it's one of those things where it's become more of a kid thing.
I think it's gotten better over the years as well. Like, I think the.
But it's never going to become a sport. It's not going to be in X Games.
Well, you never know. I don't know. I would like to watch Big Vert scootering. Why not?
Did your dad ever want you to do vert scootering? I'd like to see someone drop in, actually. That's kind of sick. Yeah. Drop in on a scooter on a vert ramp?
With like a...
We do the mega ramp and stuff.
With like a 7.
Yeah, they do the mega ramp. Ryan Willey, the Aussie guy that's a BMX dude, is ridiculous
on
that thing.
It's just gone so far.
He's insane what he does on that thing.
It's like a computer game.
But you know what's crazy is we have a few of the BMX guys that were pro scooter guys that are now BMX. Yeah. And they say because of the way they hold the handles and the way they do it, it makes you better at BMX. It makes it easier to do the tricks on a BMX bike than it is...
I can appreciate that.
On a scooter. And then... Did your dad ever like try and push you into moto to compete moto?
No, because he did motocross, and then I remember he wanted to stop traveling. We used to travel what would be like 2-3 hours every weekend, and that to us was a lot. And then I started racing BMX, and we're always down in the South Coast. We're miles away. The traveling got so much worse. So then when I was doing the BMX thing, somebody said, "Oh, you should try this." Downhill, I tried that, and then again, just traveling all over the country. So the traveling just got so much worse. But I ride motocross now like a lot in the winter, and I love it, to be fair. Like, the weather's been so bad here this week, we've sort of struggled. But that's as soon as the last race is done, the bike comes out. I don't really ride in summer because if I hurt myself doing that, I don't want to go to my team manager and say, "Oh, I've snapped my leg on my motocross bike."
Yeah, well, it sounds like
that conversation.
You've probably had more crashes on your motorbike than your mountain bike, it sounds like.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But luckily, like I said, I must bounce quite good because I've not really hurt myself so much.
So your first World Cup, you competed in, you were 16.
Yeah, I was still at school.
And then you finished that season in 8th place.
As a junior, yeah.
How was going to school and competing at the World Cup level?
It was actually really good. My school, like, I wasn't, like, the most bright kid at school. I was always well-behaved. So the school,
I don't know, were you?
Yes. So school used to let me go, and they used to put it down as work experience, like, every Friday or whatever it would be when we need to travel away. The school was really cool, like, because I hear different stories of kids, oh, they weren't allowed to get out of school to go racing, but my school was awesome. They used to let me go whenever I had to go, and I even missed exams, like, because I was, like, one of the oldest in my school year. So that meant I was, like, still racing World Cups because I was quite old for my school year.
Yeah.
So that's, I had exams and racing, and they let me redo the exam when I got back or something, which you're not normally allowed to do.
Crazy.
So, yeah, they were really good. And then, because obviously I was just going to go racing anyway. So, like, the last couple of years at school were totally that are all in preparation for exams. I may as well not have even been there, but...
It sounds like you were doing your exams on the road.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Did you have, like, apart from your father, obviously, who was a huge mentor, did you have other mentors within the biking community at that time?
Yeah, because like I said, we're like quite a small knit like community at home for downhill. Like, you can go practicing one weekend and you'd see like Steve P and Jay Atherton and all these guys that were racing World Cups. So that you knew that it was possible to be those, to do what they were doing, racing at the highest level from the youngest age, really. So I guess when I was younger, you'd look in the magazines, you'd see PE, you'd see the Athertons and see all these guys racing. But it was never like, I want to race World Cups. It just happened. Like, I was just like, I guess I was good enough and opportunities just came up. And we ended up racing World Cups and I still am 15 years later.
That's crazy. Were there many people your age? Was there an age bracket there, or were there a lot of people young on the World Cup, or most people much older than you?
So you start racing World Cups like at 16, and then that's in the junior category. So now they have a specific junior category where they race at a different time, and they don't have to qualify. Like, no, they do have to qualify, but it's only in their age. Whereas when I was younger, we just had to qualify in the men's field. So you might only get three juniors qualify for the final. So it was a little different to what it is now. So I guess like from a young age, I've always been around people older than me. Like, it was funny, I'd be racing a national on a weekend with old guys, like 50-year-old blokes, you know, and I could just have conversation with those guys. Then I'd go back to school on Monday and you're dealing... dealing with, it sounds a bit bad, but like, you're just back with kids who were playing Sunday league football, like soccer.
Well, there's something super I would even say special about that, because I was in a similar boat, and I think that being around elders or being around mentors or people of an older age, you're going to grow up much faster. And I think the street smarts you have and the world knowledge you have, you're gaining way more from traveling around the world, competing and being around older people than you are
100%.
In that. And not everybody is able to have that experience, but it's one of those things of, you know, you hear some people say, oh, you're an old soul, or you're this or that. You're an old soul because of the mentors and the information you've been given, and you take that into this world. And I think you'll gain far more out of life doing it that way than being at school and having to learn the hard way.
Like, another example is, I'd have been all the way in the arsehole of nowhere in Wales somewhere, like no phone signal, nothing, racing my bike all weekend. And then, like, I'd come back and my friend would say, oh, we're going to the mall that's an hour away, but we're going in 2 weeks. It's like they have these plans for the stupidest, smallest things where they have to plan all this stuff when I'm just traveling around the world pretty much. And they're like, for them to travel an hour somewhere in the car at home is like such a big thing. Whereas like, I was jumping on planes, this, that, going here, there and everywhere. So like, as much as like I wasn't the best in school, I had so much like life experience. Like, I could just go and get on a plane at 16, whereas kids at school wouldn't have dreamed of doing that.
Yeah. Or understand how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So in 2011 was when you barged onto the scene, world champs in Champéry. That's when you won by 11 seconds in tough conditions. What do you think the key to that was? And then my other thing is, what on the second of that is, what's the key to 15 years later still being at the same level or at the highest level?
Yeah, so the key to that, I guess, back then was I was young and I was like not a care in the world. The bike was my world, and I'd ridden a lot in those conditions, like we've mentioned. So it all just, it was just like, it came easy when I was young like that. Now it's different, I guess. But like, we said, I've been quite good with injuries. I've looked after my body. I haven't been injured so much. I've never had at one time, like when I had shoulder fixed, I missed half the season and had a bit of rehab then, but that's as long as I would have had off the bike.
Do you think like it's a bit of like no fear when you're a kid? You're kind of like fearless. You're in there. You don't give two craps, but you're there. So you're just going to give it all. As you get older, you've mentally got to think about it. You've got to physically prepare your body. You've mentally got to think about it. And there's much more to deal with than when you're kind of at a certain age where...
I see it now with the young kids. They're just like throwing caution to the wind. They'll be jumping everything first. They'll just be flying straight away. But like what's funny is... Because I love riding. I love riding downhill. I don't necessarily love the racing part of it. Like the pressure and the anxiety and everything is just crazy. Like that Saturday or Sunday that we race, it's not exactly like a fun day. You can probably vouch for it yourself.
Oh, like when for sure. Like you're in your own mind in a way, like thinking about all the 10 different things that may go wrong and what can go right. And... You know, for me as like a young competitor, even to older, it was like I had to like harness whatever energy to kind of give me this push to be okay with hurting myself or pushing into the danger zone. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a lot of like punk rock and music and riding with headphones that like would give me this energy to get like try something for new, you know. And did you, what kind of like, you know, methods do you use to kind of get prepped to?
So like
haul ass downhill.
So we have our final race run on a Saturday afternoon and we have like, we go to the top of the mountain with our mechanic and we have a spin bike for like warming up. And I just put headphones on, put probably the same music on and just have
Katy Perry.
We have the same
Ozzy Osbourne.
The same routine every weekend. You just like click into this space where everything just happens automatically and try and get into the start as, like with the minimum gap from getting off the spin bike so your legs are still ready to go. And yeah, you just have a routine and just trying to be planned, have everything written down, like what time you're going to eat. So then there's no room for like, oh, what should I do now? Because you just know exactly how the day is going to go. But like, I still love riding and like, I'll be the first guy at the lift waiting for it to open for practice. And I get a bit of shit for it. Like everyone's like, oh, how many runs have you done today? And like, because I used to do so much practice just because I love riding.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten older, I have gotten more wise to it because obviously you need to be as fresh as you can when you come to racing. But I just love riding. And even still, like when I go riding, like I have some friends and they'll faff around and they'll take ages getting ready. I just want to get my gear on and go ride. And just because I love it still.
Yeah.
When you're doing these, like the practice runs, like what percentage of like full speed are you going for some of these? Are you going at like 80%?
We'll build up to doing each section at 100% pretty much. But then, well, we'll say 90%. And then you always find when you do a race run, sometimes you're like, how did I even make it to the bottom? Because you have that adrenaline and that extra little push. And yeah, so, but in practice we do it in like, I try and do it in sections. So by the time I come to race on Saturday, I will have hit everything at a really good speed.
Are you breathing? Like when you race, like to practice? No, some of the guys don't breathe that much.
Yeah, no, I like, make a conscious effort to try and like if I listen to watch my GoPro of a race run, I'll be like, you'll be able to hear me consciously breathing.
Yeah,
just so you force yourself to do it.
That's crazy. So Monster Energy has a super stacked heavy squad, male and female. Who are your favorite Monster teammates to rip around with?
It's funny, you know, like we're all like so far spread out and stuff like that. We don't really do so much together. We're all in our own teams and on our own programs, but Monster has some top guys, you know, like we've got Pierre on who is just bosses like so strong, so fast, and yeah, just a machine. And then you've got Loris Vergier, who's like another French guy, and he's like the polar opposite to Pierre on. He's much more smaller guy, you know, like smoother, more finesse, but like the team's just stacked with top quality riders.
Sick. One other thing here, we're getting pretty close to the end here, but you were one of the first riders to do a run with a mixed wheel size setup. Yeah. Has that proven to be an advantage to you, and what is that?
So, yeah, we have a 29-inch wheel on the front and a 27.5-inch wheel on the back. So, like, back in the day, like in 2011, we were riding 26-inch wheels,
yep.
So smaller wheels. And then we progressed to 27.5. And then some teams went to 29. So that's big. That's like a road bike wheel. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I'm only small. So when I went try to 29 at front and rear, I'm getting hit up the ass with a big wheel all the time. Getting buzzed up the ass. So then obviously that's no good because then the bike starts going like this. So then we went to a mullet, which they... So that's 27.5 in the back.
Yep.
So that gives me more room so the back wheel doesn't hit me as much anymore. And so my team at the time were really on it and we got it turned around really quick. And that's what everybody's doing now.
Crazy.
Yeah. So.
Pioneer.
There you go.
What are your goals going into 2023?
So yeah, I was at team camp like a couple of weeks ago in Mallorca with my team and we had to sit down and write what our goals were, because we don't often do that really. We just go and race as fast as we can and hope for the best.
try to get fucking first.
That's the goal. But yeah, like, want to be on the podium at the World Cups every weekend, and then once you're on the podium every weekend, there's a win. You're knocking on the door for a win, so we need to get back to that. Them ways.
Love it. Well, we appreciate you here at Monster Energy, Danny Hart. What we do here is Danny Cass does this quick little lightning round at the end. Brittany chimes in, and you just got to be fast, answer quick. If you don't, sword drops down and we... No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, first question. What is a piece of advice you would give your younger self?
What I would give to my younger self... What I say to other kids is just have fun with it. And to be honest, I did that. So I'll just say, just carry on having fun.
Most meaningful trophy in your career?
Well, my 2011 rainbow jersey and gold medal changed my life pretty much. So
sick.
That.
You have two little daughters. Will you try for a boy or are you guys done?
Right now we're done. Things might change, but... Hard work.
Need a bigger camper van.
I was going to say, he probably looks at some of these European camper vans and is like, whoa, let me get over here.
The camper's here. Like, we were looking because we'd like to come back this year, I guess, like after my season, because my season finishes in Canada. So we're like, we're already close. And like coming here and getting a camper, but nothing has a garage. And we've got all these bikes and... buy a mower prospect. There's nowhere to put it.
No, you need a fun mover.
Yeah, well,
we used to have one
need,
with a little like 10-foot kind of cargo space.
Yeah, that's, you just don't see that here. Like,
no,
common. It's not common at all.
I know, and you always see like the camper with the trailer, and that always kind of looks weird to me.
Yeah, well, that's admin.
Yeah. what's your favorite English slang word?
You can't say it.
I don't even know. Where I'm from to you guys, every word's probably slang.
What's the most inspiring mountain bike racer of all time? Or who is?
For me, I would have to say Steve Pate.
Yeah, Steve Pate's sick. I did the Baja 1000 with him like 10 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, he's rad. Oh, we were in the same group.
That would be fun.
We grew up with a pretty badass snowboarder, Sean Palmer.
Yeah.
What do you think about him?
Well, I was actually listening to a podcast yesterday and they were saying there was a lot of stories about Palm. And he actually came back a few in like 2008-09 and did some downhill races, but didn't quite go as planned, I don't think. But
he almost made the 2018 or the 2014 Olympic snowboard team.
He's an amazing all-around athlete.
Need to get him in here. He's not a monster guy, is he? But
yeah, he'd talk to us. He was at my 18th birthday.
All right. And what do you think? Who's the best young rider slaying it right now?
Right now, you've got Jackson Goldstone is really killing it. Like, I think he would have even won a World Cup last year, and he's just second year junior. And then that's it, really.
And then last question, is there anyone you would like to ride with that you didn't get to looking up as a amateur?
No, not really.
No, you got to race them all and beat them all that first year.
I've come through like a lot of people have come and gone in the time I've been doing it. So, like, I think there's only maybe a couple guys that have, like, you've got Greg Minnaar, who has done it forever, seemingly. He's like over 40 and he could still go win a World Cup. So he's obviously been there a while. But yeah, I've been doing these things for a while now and gone through so many different like eras sort of thing. So they've all been there. I raced Petey. Beat Petey. He Sick. Beat me.
What about Palmer?
Yeah, that would be. Well, I did race him. He came back for a little bit, but wasn't much of a race.
Brittany, any last words?
I think like I always like to wonder like what pushes you forward, like what's the perseverance that you have to go and continuously do it. Like you've talked about how you've been lucky to not have a lot of serious injuries, but you've also talked about having two children and how each race gets a little bit more taxing, I think. So what is kind of pushing you and what advice could you give others that would feel the same?
Like I said, what's crazy is like I still don't feel any different to what I did when I was 15, 16
years old. You just have this love and passion for it.
It's like, do you want me to start that again?
No.
It's all good. We run it like that. But there we go. Brittany's dogs are here, and it took to the last question.
I know. He's been doing great, but Ariane might be here. That's what might
be it. I just like, I still love riding my bike.
Yeah.
And until that changes, then
that's just it's just your love for it. Yeah. So as long as you continuously love what you do, then there's
that's
no.
That's exactly it.
I love that.
Have you ever done any winter downhill racing?
Oh, that's scary.
Ooh.
Like
I
on snow?
To be fair, no, but there is talk of the UCI wanting to do like a winter thing in the front, in like the Alps.
Because I remember at X Games, they used to do like the downhill on the slopes, and I always thought that was pretty cool.
Well, they have those bikes that are on the sleds. What are those?
Well, no,
things?
They did like
they're like snowmobiles,
too.
Basically. Yeah.
No, but it's like
they're like motorbikes with sled tracks on them.
Is there
but
a
you
motor
need
on
like
them?
A
yeah,
really packed, right?
Yeah, I
for
guess
the bike.
So. I've
it
never
be,
done it.
You
so
never
yeah,
done it?
No,
give it a go.
It would be good. I guess you need to do it on ice with proper tires.
Yeah, with the studs.
Yeah,
did freestyle for all as well. They did freestyle moto as well, and they X'd that pretty quickly because a lot of broken bones.
I remember seeing. Was it Deegan?
Yeah, snapped his femur.
That was a bad do, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. All right, Danny. Well, that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Unleashed with the Dingo and Danny, fueled by Monster Energy.